Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio by Trent Horn, the magnificent, or I forget, how am I supposed to say it? Trent Horn, the marvelous, or somebody. Trent has a title that he wants us all to call him, and it's Trent Horn, the...
Trent Horn, the ambivalent?
No.
Trent Horn...
that was not it.
The indigent. No, Trent Horn.
Trent Horn, the indigent.
That's why I can't get you back for lunch the other day, so, because I'm Trent Horn.
Still Trent Horn, the indigent?
The indigent. Okay.
888-318-7884 is the number, and we're asking you, why do you reject Catholic morality? Is there a particular aspect of Catholic morals that you reject? I have to say that I have noticed that when we talk about Catholic morality, the most common objections, Trent, are in the area of sexual morality, and these are not necessarily the gravest areas of Catholic moral teaching. Certainly the teachings on the just use of war, what you can and can't do, and when you can and can't enter warfare. Those are actually, I think, many people have a kind of, modern view of what's acceptable in warfare. And the church has some very serious and important and actually humanity preserving things to say about that. And the other one that I don't think we get many arguments on, but maybe it's because everybody gives themselves a pass, including me. I'm not trying to – on the financial stuff, on the economic side of Catholic moral teaching, that, you know, like, for example, the idea that I have an obligation to other people and not just my family, right? Because the mafia knows that you have an obligation to your family. But beyond that, I have an obligation to in society to care for the poor, to care for those in need, all that. I think many people just let that go in one ear and out the other.
The church is not identifiable with a particular economic school of thought or a certain political opinion. It's easier to find places that diverge from Catholic doctrine than completely agree with it. Because on the two extremes, you could have kind of the cult of Ayn Rand, radical objectivism, libertarianism that says you have no moral responsibilities to other people. If your money is yours, nobody else has any kind of rights to that whatsoever. But then the other extreme is to embrace socialism, to say, well, you have no right to have private property at all. The state or the community will give you what you need and then redistribute that which is yours to other people. So I think a lot of times we don't get questions on economic matters because unless it's those firm areas where someone denies either the right to private property or the duty to care for others, in between is sort of a gray area of prudential judgments to decide how one gives their money, how one uses it to help the poor. And Catholics can disagree and can disagree with one another on those areas involving prudential judgment. But I think what we at Catholic Answers want to articulate are those areas of Catholic moral teaching that are not up to prudential judgment, that are things that have been clearly taught, in some cases infallibly taught, when it comes to faith and morals, of what Catholics are obliged to believe. And among those moral teachings, well, one that's infallibly taught is the wrongness of killing an innocent person.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no two ways around that. That's not changing.
And Whether that's a child in the womb, an elderly person who's dying, or someone in warfare.
And that's why we see then in Evangelium Vitae, like Pope St. John Paul II, like tiptoes right up to the line of infallibility when he talks about declaring with the authority of the church, unbroken throughout history, the wrongness of ending a child's life in the womb through direct abortion. And there are other issues that come along the way. Now, there's going to be even cases in morality where you might have gray areas that arise. You might have moral dilemmas. You might have areas where prudential judgment is used. Like even with abortion, I would say it's an issue of prudential judgment whether one should use graphic images of abortion in order to end abortion and change people's minds.
Right.
I believe a certain case can be made for their use in some contexts but not others. But that's one where, once again, that would be an area of where we can agree to disagree and try to work together on this, but not one where the facts and moral facts are just laid bare and clear.
But would you say that it is clear moral teaching of the Catholic Church that I have a duty to welcome immigrants and strangers?
Well, it depends what you mean by the term I. The Catechism refers to nations, talking about how nations have an obligation to the best of their ability or to the extent that they are able to welcome migrants, to welcome those who are seeking a better life. So the Catechism in the section on immigration recognizes both. With Catholicism, it's the classic both and, not either or. There is a right to migrate, but nations also have the right to maintain sovereign borders and to promote the common good within their borders and subject immigration to particular legal restrictions and protocols. And so the church teaches that wealthier nations have an obligation to help less well-off nations and to assist those who migrate, especially those who are seeking asylum from genocide, from religious persecution.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, nations have to be able to maintain the common good for the entire populace. And so they set limits on things, you know, like immigration.
But I would point to, like, in the Second World War, before the Second World War, how the United States was among the countries that turned away Jewish immigrants from Europe fleeing the Nazis.
Right.
And there's a way in which our...
And I think, honestly, a lot of that, though, was motivated by things like anti-Semitism. And what's hard is, especially when people use intrinsic evils, like racism. Like, racism is an intrinsic evil right there.
Right.
And so I think sometimes in the immigration debate, it's so heated, immigration issues...
Right.
Racism is quickly on the fore of the discussion, that some people are opposed to immigration because they want to maintain standards of racial purity. I mean, that's a lot of people have that opinion now, and there are people who have had that opinion, well, for a lot of Catholics. You don't want those Catholics, those Irish Catholics coming in and wrecking everything. Catholics were the victims of this racism and xenophobia for a long time. And so even in 1945, there's rampant anti-Semitism in the United States. Gregory Peck, I think it was Gregory Peck, he was in a movie, I think won an Academy Award, called A Gentleman's Agreement.
Oh, right, about the redlining, basically, of Jewish people.
Yeah, where you couldn't get a mortgage, you couldn't get rent in certain neighborhoods, they were restricted. And so he posed as being Jewish for an article similar to, and I can't remember the name of the guy who did it, he wrote the book Black Like Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the typical journalism, I'm going to assume that other identity and learn more about it. But here, once again, you see a mixture in these moral issues. You see moral teaching is definitive, and moral teaching that is proposed for us to believe, and then areas where we can apply it. It's clear in the immigration debate that people should not be treated as subhuman just because they are from a different race or ethnicity. On the other hand, though, we have to find a balance between allowing people to immigrate and maintaining the common good of society.
It's, I guess what I was trying to get at, though, Trent, and this is where I think people will sometimes reject Catholic morality out of hand on this or that, because often the language that the church uses, and which is often the language of the Lord himself or the language of the Psalms or the prophets or something, it becomes politicized in this context. And so then, like, if I say there is a positive obligation to welcome immigrants and strangers, that's one of the clearest things in the scriptures, then people will say, well, oh, you're one of those, you know? And then I feel like if by that you mean I'm a Christian, I hope I won't ever deny that. But there's a way in which the modern contemporary American concerns –
I don't want
a lot of code words in it, I guess, and people don't like to hear the code words.
Yeah, Catholicism is not one political party. It's not one economic view. It's the truth, and it's the truth that has been reflected through a prism of human thought and is best seen through a variety of human ways of understanding socio-political realities. And we do our best Catholic answers to articulate that, speak where the church speaks, and to refrain on... Now, each of us has our own ideas about prudential judgment, sure, and I'm happy to share them in an appropriate context, but we want to clarify what the church teaches on these issues.
So any of those Catholic moral teachings that you either disagree with or want to challenge, you are welcome to do so. Why do you reject Catholic morality is our topic today, 888-318-7884. And I suppose I'm being more provocative than usual today, but sometimes patriotism is a reason why people reject Catholic morality. I do it because I support my country, and so, you know, and then the church says, no, this is not acceptable moral behavior. Well, you know what? That's what my country and I feel that way sometimes when people talk about, frankly, when people talk about the nuclear bombings in Japan.
One must be very – there is a heresy called Americanism. It's an actual heresy that that the Pope has written about. He wrote about in the 19th century,
right?
And it comes from a larger view of nationalism. The idea that the grounding of your moral framework comes from your country, seeing that you are not failing to recognize, as St. Paul teaches in Philippians 3:20, that we are citizens of the commonwealth of heaven. That is our primary citizenship. We have dual citizenship. We are citizens of states here on earth.
Yeah.
We have real obligations to where we hold citizenship. But it's not our sole or our primary. Our primary citizenship, as St. Paul says in Philippians 3:20, is the commonwealth in heaven. And so when we decide I want to pick party before before church, I put party and nation before my church, I wouldn't pick the kingdoms and the prince. Put not your trust in princes, as the psalm says. Put your trust in the Lord.
Again, 888-318-7884, the number. I've made people wait. I wanted to talk about some. I just wanted to make sure we were broadening the conversation fully, because sometimes we can get stuck on sexual ethics when we're talking, or sexual morality when we're talking about Catholic morals. But any aspect of Catholic morality sticks in your craw. As my good friend Trent Horn says, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope and see the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, what's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject? Why do you reject Catholic morality? Those are our questions for the hour. Trent Horn, our guest, 888-31-TRUTH, our number. And as I said, I have left people waiting, so we will go now to the phones. Daniel, why do you reject Catholic morality?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. First of all, I just want to say, Trent, I am a major, major fan. I'm not going to fanboy too much, but I actually am newly Catholic myself. I'm going to RCIA right now.
Wonderful.
And you were a huge part of that. I loved your debate with James White. That was a big part of it. But, yeah, seriously, thank you.
And praise be to God.
In terms of Catholic morality, I'm having a really hard trouble with theology of the body regarding death and funeral rites.
Okay.
Because I came from an atheist background.
Sure.
And so when I look at how strict the church is when it comes to burials and having to go through all these rites and making sure that you're buried whole, I have a couple problems that, like, with cremation, it's a whole lot better cost-wise. For low-income families, cremation is good for the environment.
Sure.
We're running out of space.
Well, Daniel, the church allows for cremation. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Right.
Go ahead.
There was the other one where there was controversy over the process of alkaline hydrolysis as being a new process. But even in my parish here, even though it's allowed cremation and all these other things, they're just seriously heavily discouraged and looked down upon. And I don't know.
Well, the church, let me read to you what the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith put out a statement on burying the dead that covers cremation. This was about 3 years ago. And this is what the CDF said. It said, in circumstances when cremation is chosen because of sanitary, economic, or social considerations, this choice must never violate the explicitly stated or reasonably inferable wishes of the deceased faithful. So, if somebody wants to be buried, does not want to be cremated, we should respect their wishes. The church raises no doctrinal objections to this practice, since cremation of the deceased body does not affect his or her soul, nor does it prevent God in his omnipotence from raising up the deceased body to new life. Thus, cremation in and of itself objectively negates neither the Christian doctrine of the soul's immortality nor that of the resurrection of the body. So I think, Daniel, one of the reasons that the church has been, and some people have taken very negative stances towards cremation, is I think that many people have chosen it without a sense, then that idea which comes from the catechism, that it's contrary to Christian doctrine, the resurrection of the dead. So you'll have people who will cremate loved ones for the purpose of saying there is no resurrection, and so they want to make sure their ashes are scattered at sea, or they're buried and they're going to grow into this tree, and they're going to live as this tree in my backyard. And that's where the church has had problems and so many times when it's abused. Or, to give you an example of my own life, if you listen to my podcast, I enjoy going to Disneyland, taking my kids. I love to hack Disneyland. And there are a fair number of people, more than one, who go to the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland and dump the cremated remains of their loved ones.
Oh, man.
No, it's something.
I didn't know that.
No, it is something the cast members on the ride are trained to watch out for. And urns and ashes are prohibited items in Disneyland for that reason. So, yes, so it happens. It does happen. So that's why when you've seen people who've had that negative attitude, I think it's bound up more in how often cremation can abuse can be done in a way contrary to respect for the dead, and understanding that as Christians, we're very counter to what the world believes, and that for many people in the world, your atheist background, death is truly the end, and you only remember someone as a memory, and you bury them, and that's it. And the only place where you go to talk to them where they are, you know, people have in movies, even in real life. I was just watching Creed 2 on the plane the other day. And Creed, you know, goes to see his, you know, Apollo Creed at his gravestone. Yeah. But lots of people will go to visit their loved one at a cemetery, and that makes sense. Their body is there, but the person is not. Their body is there, but they have an immortal soul that has gone to a particular judgment that is either in heaven, purgatory, or hell that we pray for, and we pray for them, knowing that they're going to be reunited with their bodies. So I would just say don't be put off by people who have an unnecessary angst towards cremation. They may just be worried about people who abuse it. But the church firmly allows it as long as it shows respect for the body. And personally, Trent speaking here, I agree with you. I think cremation is a good way for many people to go about burying the dead, because I think there's a lot of odious individuals in the funeral industry. Not all, but there's some people who take advantage of those. Yeah, they take advantage of people in their darkest hour. And it's like, well, don't you want them to rest in comfort in this $8,000 casket? I think they'll be fine.
They'll be fine. I think it's like, that's a great answer.
I think they'll be fine. It's like, but this one has satellite radio. It's
like, well, they could get channel 130, EWTN.
Yeah, they can't get us on all of them, but they'll at least, as long as it has channel 130. So that's where I would, so for me as a personal thing, I am inclined towards things like cremation as a way to not burden survivors of the deceased, helping them to focus on praying for the dead and not worry about, you know, just like I hate when marriage gets tied up with extravagant weddings, I hate when funerals, which are important, like the rites you spoke about, they're so important because this person, there are two incredibly important steps you're going to take in your Christian life. The day you die to sin and the day you die to the world. The day you die to sin is when you get baptized. And the day you die to the world is when you're dead. They're both doors, the door into the Christian life and then the door to eternal life with God. And that's why the church takes funeral rites so very, very seriously as baptismal rites, because they're really the pivotal moments in our life. So I hope that was helpful for you. I'm very grateful that you've just come into the church. And if you want to give our call screen your email, I hope you'll stay online. I'd love to send you a book as a late present for that. Would that work?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Daniel. Why do you reject Catholic morality? That's our topic today. Trent Horn is our guest. We go now to Stacy in South Carolina. Stacy, why do you reject Catholic morality?
Well, I don't really reject Catholic morality, but I did just hear, but I strive to conform myself. And something that I'm just struggling with was news at the top of the hour when Pope Francis put the blood of Syrian and Yemeni children on the hands of Americans and Europeans because of the weapons manufacturers in our country. So my question is, what is my personal culpability, then that's A. B, corporate culpability for citizens of the United States, mm-hmm. and then C is these are private corporations who do have government contracts for other things, so, you know, there's a lot of enmeshment. So
right.
that's, I guess there's a just war theory, something in there that
right.
you could... It's up to you. You're the brainiac whose books I own, and I love you. So thank you very much for your work.
Well, thank you. You're very kind, and I'm glad that you called in, Stacey. This, what you're talking about, is dealing with the morality of arms sales and distribution. And once again, the church recognizes the right to self-defense, and that's very clear. You have a right to defend yourself. And that includes not just with your fists, but using appropriate means to defend yourself. Because if I've got my fists and the other guy's got a gun, I'm not going to last very long unless I'm Chuck Norris, you know. Because when, you know, and insert Chuck Norris joke here for our Facebook feed. I'm sure they'll come up with plenty there. So we have the right to create means to defend ourselves and to defend others and to be able to participate in just wars to protect innocent lives. But the church recognizes that war is hell, and selling weapons of war is incredibly messy and dirty. It's a fine line between creating weapons to protect people and war profiteering. Tony Stark deals with that very objection in the first Iron Man. This is probably my
Chuck
fifth,
Norris
my
and
fifth
Tony run. Stark.
Yeah.
Well, who else you got?
Plenty. Sorry.
All right, go ahead.
So the Catechism says this. It says that the production and the sale of arms affect the common good of nations and of the international communities, paragraph 2316 of the Catechism. Hence, public authorities have the right and duty to regulate them. The short-term pursuit of private or collective interests cannot legitimate undertakings that promote violence and conflict among nations and compromise the international juridical order. So I would say that when it comes to the morality of arms, like arms that are used in conflicts like in Syria, that it gets complicated politically very quickly. I would say, though, that at an individual level, you're very removed from geopolitics and international armed conflict. So even if your country does something wrong, unless you directly vote for and will for these things, you've got very limited personal culpability. And I'm not saying that what the United States is doing, and I don't want to comment on what Pope Francis said, because I'd want to look at the exact context of the quote and what he said to be able to reflect upon it. But I will say there are clear cases where you have organizations that are criminal. They're terrorist, or they're involved in unjust conflicts, and it would be wrong to knowingly sell weapons to them to facilitate their immoral activities. And so weapons manufacturers, I believe, can be held responsible for that, and nations can be held responsible for financing and supporting, especially terrorist organizations. So you can't just say, well, you know, if they pull the trigger, it doesn't matter. If you know someone is going to definitely use a weapon for evil, and you provide it with them, there's cooperation of evil there, and so you can be responsible for that based on your intent and how much you know of what's happening here. So I guess that's kind of the flyover to look at it. But is that helpful?
Yes, it is. Thank you. And I think that might be that type of a question or thought process from a layperson like me might be why you don't get questions on the morality of that, because whether we are or we're not, a lot of times we feel very removed and powerless against these geopolitical issues.
Sure.
And so my response is to pray with, I've got 12 kids, we pray as a family for children of war and
right.
for peace. So
yeah.
That's where I would feel like if I didn't pray, that would be a sin of omission, and it's the only thing I can do as a puny little mom.
Oh, no.
Not so puny.
Any mother of 12 does not...
Is the hero of the story.
The adjective puny can never be applied to anyone who has had a dozen children,
yeah,
in my opinion.
It doesn't matter what the story is. If you're the mother of 12, you're the hero of that story. 888-318-7884, our number. 888-318-7884. Which Catholic moral teaching do you reject, or why do you reject Catholic morality at all? You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Jacqueline, I don't have a location on Jacqueline, but Jacqueline, why do you reject Catholic moral teaching?
I'm not sure that it applies as that, but
okay.
Really what sticks in my craw is the reports of non-transparency between bishops, priests and bishops, and cardinals in this crisis, mm-hmm. that they won't tell the truth, and they're getting away with it, even the Holy Father seems to, at these conferences, doesn't seem to hit the nail on the head about getting this crisis cleaned up
sure.
in an astute manner.
Well, Jacqueline, let me ask you a question. Well, stay on the line, and I will ask you a question when we return.
Sorry, Jacqueline, I'm in charge of the clock, and I didn't do it right. So hang on a second, and we will get Trent's response. Again, 888-31-TRUTH, our number. Topic, why do you reject Catholic morality? Right back with more of that after this.
This is Bishop James Conley of the Diocese of Lincoln. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" Turns out that today, as back then, this question has a lot of different answers. So many groups want to appropriate Jesus, tweaking his identity until he looks and sounds just like one of them. But then you no longer have the Lord, says apologist Trent Horn. You have an imposter. In his new groundbreaking book, Counterfeit Christ, Trent exposes 18 phony versions of Jesus that we encounter today, helping you to recognize the fakes when you see them, explain why they're phony, and make a case for the full truth and beauty of who Jesus is, the Christ, the Son of the living God. Order your copy of Counterfeit Christ today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Love and beauty. As a little girl, Dawn Eden Goldstein knew she wanted those things, that in them, somehow, she would find God. Over the years, as a rock journalist, she moved among some of popular music's best-known artists, straining to capture that transcendent love and beauty in every note and lyric. In Sunday Will Never Be the Same, Dawn recounts her spiritual journey in beautifully wrought detail, mixing powerful accounts of trauma, healing, and epiphany with funny anecdotes from inside the music scene. It is the rare conversion story that delights as it inspires, amuses as it edifies, and ultimately lays before the reader a lived testimony to the transforming grace of Christ. Order your copy of Sunday Will Never Be the Same by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
There's a fight for your child's soul on college campuses. We're discussing the environment your children are exposed to on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Now let's get back to more of Catholic Answers Live.
Trent Horn, our guest this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Trent is the podcaster behind a podcast called Council of Trent, but it's C-O-U-N-C-I-L. No, C-O-U-N-S-E-L.
Let me give you a little bit.
I got it backwards.
I'll give you a little bit of counsel. S-E-L is when you give people advice.
You are the, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You are Trent from the Council of Trent.
Yes.
And but you can find it at TrentHornPodcast.com. And we're going back to Jacqueline. I didn't forget, but... in a minute, I want to ask you if there's anything interesting over there at TrentHornPodcast.com. Like, what's new, you know?
Oh, sure.
So, well, should we do that first, or should we go to Jacqueline first?
Let's go back to Jacqueline. She's been waiting patently.
She has been waiting. I don't know. Have you been waiting patiently, or have you been impatient, Jacqueline?
Yes, I'm here, and thank you for taking my call. Did I make myself clear?
Yeah, Jacqueline, you're concerned about the transparency and action, or some might say inaction, of priests, bishops, and the Pope on the sexual abuse crisis. Did I summarize that well enough?
Yeah, about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. What do you think would be the one thing the Pope and the bishops would do that would make you feel better about this? What's the one thing they could do?
If they would be honest, it seems that to me that it's a sin not to admit what they have done, and what it is doing is driving so many people away from the church for the time when it's critical that they have answers.
Well, I think that the Pope and the bishops and many, many priests have admitted that terrible crimes have taken place, both with abuse and indifference and actively covering it up. So I think they have. And when it comes to transparency, I know many dioceses who have now publicly listed priests that have been credibly accused of sexual abuse on their website. They have publicly made that clear to individuals. I know people who serve on lay review boards for dioceses, noting the extreme care they're taking in any accusation to make sure that the individuals involved are not allowed to be anywhere near individuals that they could harm, and to review accusations swiftly and to make sure that all the facts are gathered and that appropriate, you know, law enforcement is involved. So I think that this is a wound we're going to keep healing, always healing from, but it's not a problem that we'll necessarily be able to solve overnight. But it's one that I do have a lot of faith in people moving forward. Now, when it comes to being honest, it was funny. I was reading in the questions on the chat here about priests, bishops, and popes, you know, not, you know, the Pope, not just being forthright about this. But I have heard some, especially some priests and bishops, their forthrightness has blown me away. Probably one of my favorites by far. If our listeners want to go back and look this up, look up my friend, Father John Lankett. He's the rector at St. Simon and Jude Cathedral in Phoenix, Arizona. Look up Father Lankett, L-A-N-K-E-I-T, Father Lankett's homily, Sexual Abuse. The ones I'm thinking of are August 19th, 2018, and September 2nd, 2018. Father Lankett, homily, abuse. I cried.
Really?
I cried that it was just so raw, honest, and helpful. And we need more priests and bishops to speak. And there are. There are. We just have to be willing to listen to
maybe
that.
Maybe Jacqueline could give us her email address and we'll send her a link.
Yeah. So Jacqueline, please send your email or any kind of correspondence to our call screener and I will send you that link. But thank you for calling.
Can I say something while Jacqueline's still here? Just want to ask you a quick question.
Yes.
The question is for you because I have to say I
can barely hear you folks.
Oh, I feel I'm a little bit more on Jacqueline's side on this than not. And don't you still feel how they say lance a boil or something, like the wound is not drained. There's still stuff we do need more honesty. We do need more bishops to stand up and be honest.
Yeah, this is not a time to have congratulatory pats on the back.
Yeah,
this
fair
is,
enough. Okay.
This is, I think there are two errors here. It's all about the golden mean, as Aristotle would say, the middle, the solid middle ground route. And the two extremes, of course, would be to pretend like there is no problem.
Yeah.
Or to completely minimize it and dismiss it. That's absurd. And equally absurd is to say that this problem justifies abandoning the church entirely.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so those are is Odysseus, Scylla and Charybdis, the rock in a hard place. You want to try to drive the ship through. And that's where I'm taking it here is to acknowledge things that are not. It's always hard also. We don't want to speak about the members of the magistracy and the bishops or even like the clergy, bishops and priests and the Pope, the clergy as some kind of monolith.
Right.
These are human beings.
Yeah.
These are human beings, and to varying degrees, they are faithful to Christ. We have to pray for every single one of them to be faithful.
Yep.
Every single one of them to be faithful or renew their fidelity to Christ. But it's just not fair to me to treat it as a monolith. Well, the bishops, the priests, like, well, what do you mean? I know priests that are indifferent and I'm thinking that you're so callous. Then I hear Father Lankett. I'm like, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
There are bishops I know who've written letters and are saying, nope, we're doing a lay review board right now. This is not happening in my diocese. And others that give you a bunch of jibber jabber. Mr. T. 18.
A bunch of gibberish. Wait a second. I just got Jacqueline, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So
that
we have to acknowledge those who are excelling and those who need to accelerate in a different direction.
Right. Tony Stark, Odysseus, Chuck Norris, and Mr. T all got mentioned.
If you listen to Free for All Friday at the Council of Trent podcast at trenthornpodcast.com, you'll see that the mind of Trent Horn is like a little pinball machine of trivia. You never know what it will light up.
Let's go to Neil. Neil, I don't have a location for you either, but what part of Catholic morality do you reject, Neil?
Well, I told the call screener that I don't necessarily disagree with Catholic morality. I'm actually a Reformed Protestant, so there are a lot of things that I disagree with, but I don't take I have a lot of respect for the Catholic Church, especially their view on the sanctity of life, and I appreciate everything that they've done.
Thank you for
to,
saying that.
Promote that. So, my question, what the issue I had, and I appreciate your program. I listen to it quite often.
Sure.
The question I had is that your guest made a statement about the bombing in Japan, and I know that was a horrible thing, but the way I understand it, it would have been much worse for the United States if we had had to invade Japan. Our loss would have been terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I disagree with that view.
Okay.
Fair enough. And that was me, Cy, not Trent, that said that. But now I will turn to Trent to make him defend me.
Sure. And the dropping the atomic bomb on Hiroshima, I believe, would still fall within a category of prudential judgment among Catholics. There are Catholics who disagree about the morality of that particular act of war. I'm not familiar with a magisterial document that says, no, this was an unjust act of war, any more than I'm familiar with one that is critical of the firebombing of Dresden or the rape of Nanking or the My Lai massacre. I'm familiar more with church documents that espouse the principles.
Yeah.
And I personally do believe that the principles of just war, about not using arms that produce greater evils than what you're trying to stop or not directly targeting innocent civilians in war, would apply, and the bombing of Hiroshima would be wrong. Would be immoral. So, Neil, I'm very sympathetic to the argument, though, because you're saying, look, it's war, it's messy, here's your choices. We either drop this bomb and thousands of people die, or we invade the home island of Japan and maybe millions of people will die. But I'm very concerned about that kind of thinking, because that's consequentialism. That's a mode of moral thinking that's alien to the gospel, that says, let's just pick whatever will minimize harm in the world. But then you've got a problem. Then you could do almost any evil thing as long as you've got a good end in sight. And St. Paul is very clear, do not do evil to accomplish good. So, Neil, for you to see where I'm coming from here, is there any kind of act in war that you would agree is wrong that we should never do?
Well, absolutely. I mean, killing of civilians, there's the Geneva Convention. I mean, absolutely. There are a lot of things that we have done that I would have to say is wrong. I mean,
right.
Any time you take life unnecessarily.
Right. But I would still say for me, that dropping a nuclear weapon onto a populated city, to me, seems very... It just doesn't seem any different than launching a cruise missile at a hospital. Maybe you're going to get a few soldiers in the hospital, but you're directly targeting a civilian population here to achieve a certain end. Because you could use the atomic bombs, they could have been detonated on... on Japanese camps or on ships or out at sea. I think there's other things that could have been done. I mean, obviously, that we only had three bombs. One was already used, and there were two left. But I really do think that when we take a step back and we ask what's right and wrong in war, and if we agree directly targeting innocent civilians is wrong, nuclear weapons are so, in most cases, nuclear weapons are, when they're used, are so indiscriminate that they affect innocent civilians in a way that I think would be unjust. But I hope this is helpful for you. And if you go to our website at Catholic.com, you can check out, just look up Hiroshima there. I think we have a whole essay. I think Chris Check might have written that essay on the bombing of Hiroshima at Catholic.com. So you might want to go and check that out. But
okay, Chris knows artillery. I mean,
he was an
artillery officer in the Marines.
But I will say that it doesn't follow. Now, once again, it's all about extremes. It doesn't follow from that the church does not say that nuclear weapons are intrinsically evil. It does have a high amount of trepidation about them. They're very powerful. But I can't say that it's 100%.
I see.
That you could never use them in an armed conflict. Because I could see, for example, you might use a small nuclear warhead to penetrate a hardened underground bunker where an enemy headquarters is, for example. Or you could use a nuclear warhead to stop a fleet of naval ships at sea.
Where there's not a civilian population.
But as I said, but the problem with nuclear fallout, with the blast itself, in populated areas, it seems to me that it indiscriminately targets civilians, and that would be wrong.
I could, but I will not ask you. Neil, thanks very much for the call. I hope that was helpful in your considerations of the matter. You know what, Trent? I said I was going to ask you about Trent Horn podcast, so let me do that before we go to the break. What is happening that's new and interesting this week at TrentHornPodcast.com?
Oh, sure. What's the haps? Tell me
what's the haps.
Tell me what's a happening. Jesus Christ Superstar. Got to be on my eighth or ninth reference by now. So we've got some great episodes on Trent Horn Podcast right now. I did an episode on logic, how to think through your faith and avoid the traps that lead to errors and lies. We have another episode this week where I invited two of my colleagues, Marie Dixon, our assistant producer, and Christine Venditti, major gifts officer, to discuss a letter to Notre Dame University to the newspaper that went viral. It was a Catholic mom worried about leggings. And so the three of us sat down to talk about how you discuss modesty in an age where it's a landmine of an issue. And I talk about it in my book with Layla Miller, three chapters, one of the hardest chapters we wrote.
Yeah.
So I've got
it was Layla Miller, by the way, who got me to stop wearing leggings. Her argument was so strong.
That is a work of mercy for all of us, Cy. So
okay.
that will be considered in her right. future beatification, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So and then other episodes, I critiqued a New York Times article trying to say that God is a logical contradiction. I even invited, he's a local professor in San Diego who wrote this New York Times article about
right.
how God's contradiction. He sent him an email to come on my podcast. He lives here. But I didn't hear back. So I'm always looking for new people to come on the show to discuss things. And on Fridays, we have fun. The most recent Friday episode were five places in the world that fascinate me that you've probably never heard of, including an island covered in thousands of snakes.
Wow. Five. Okay. Fridays are fun over there.
All at TrenthornPodcast.com. If you're a premium subscriber, you get access to the Catechism Study Series, lots of other bonus episodes. It's a fun place to be.
How did the island get covered in snakes?
You have to listen to the episode. Now, that's free. That's free for all Friday. Just go to TrenthornPodcast.com, subscriber or not, and you can find out about that. And probably one of the world's most remote inhabited islands. I can't tell you which. You'll have to go to the episode to find out.
It's got to be one of the Hawaiian Islands.
No.
They're quite remote, the Hawaiian Islands.
I'll give you a hint. You're in the wrong ocean.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
The Pacific Ocean's so big, though. All right. Well, we'll take a break, and we'll come back to more of your calls about which Catholic moral teaching you reject. If there's a Catholic moral teaching that you reject, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Or if you'd like to challenge us on the whole idea of Catholic morality, 888-318-7884.
This is Dr. Scott Hahn, and stay tuned for more Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
St. John Paul II stated that, for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love. And the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation.
So we know we're called, but how do we do it?
St. Paul Street Evangelization can help. To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Morning Glory. It's Catholic from coast to coast.
Suffering is, instead of seeing it as a participation in Christ's passion, in union with his redeeming sacrifice on the cross, we see it as, we have to avoid pain, we have to avoid suffering. People need to think that it's not about avoiding suffering that we think is meaningless. It's about finding meaning in the suffering that's unavoidable.
Morning Glory. Talking about everything important to today's Catholic. Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live, which Catholic moral teaching do you reject?
I wish we had talked about modesty a little earlier, Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Because I love to get the calls on modesty. Yes.
Right.
I believe that it is a teaching of the Catholic Church that you should dress modestly.
Now, that is correct.
Okay. Yes, I'm correct.
Yes.
That'll drive some people crazy. The idea that you should dress
well,
modestly.
Well, if anyone doesn't believe that you ought to be modest, yeah, I would enjoy talking with them, but most people agree with that. What's funny, once again, when the different kinds of issues we debate, usually, you know, there's the clear principles, right and wrong, and then there's the application of them. With the debate about modesty, it gets really messy about the application, what is and isn't modest. Basically, part of it, I have, you know, there's some general guidelines, very, very general guidelines one can issue. But part of it is also you kind of have to borrow from Justice Potter Stewart. I know it when I see it.
Immodesty.
When something is immodest versus modest. You have cultural considerations to be factored in, but there are just things that are just clear as day based on context, things like that. But
like women showing their ankles.
There was a context when that was not appropriate, yes.
Oh, but maybe times have changed. All right.
They have changed a tad.
Let's go to Tom in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Tom, which Catholic moral teaching do you reject?
Hey, guys. First of all, I love your show. So
thank you.
I don't know if it's a Catholic moral teaching. I thought I heard one of you say that the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were immoral.
That was me. That was
did
not
I hear
Trent.
That?
You did correctly. That was me. I was probably more definitive than Trent would be on that.
Yeah, I would say, Tom, that I lean towards that position, but I'm not aware of a magisterial document.
But that's not a teaching of the church.
No, I base
that's
it
your
on the
personal opinion.
I base it on the principle that you even in warfare, you cannot directly attack innocent civilians. And so I take those attacks to be direct attacks on innocent civilians, I mean, which I think is supported by the fact that almost everyone killed was, in fact, a civilian. And we're talking about numbers maybe as high as 230,000 people. So I just am applying that principle and saying that.
So you would then consider all the bombing really done by the American and Allied forces in World War II to have been immoral.
Well, and you use the word strategic because what happened in the last 2 years of the war was the indiscriminate bombing of civilians, and I would say yes. So when we're talking about things like bombing London or bombing Dresden, those are acts specifically directed against civilians, and yes, those are immoral.
So, okay, and you don't weigh that against the greater good of saving American lives or the Allied lives?
I do not, no.
Well, and Tom, I don't know if you heard when we discussed with the other caller here, I think that we have to look at larger principles here, and that even after World War II, you had a lot of discussion. Well, this really took place after World War I when you had laws of war really implemented, because war is a very nasty thing, and we have to say, all right, are there limits to how we should properly engage one another in war, even if the goal is to reduce casualties? So, for example, do you think that armies should be prohibited from using chemical warfare in battle that causes excruciating deaths like mustard gas, for example, even if the goal is to save the lives of your own soldiers?
I don't think those are apples and oranges, because the number of lives of your own soldiers that were saved, you are actually also saving massive amounts of lives of the combatant enemy at the same time.
Right, but do you think...
If you could say that you could use chemical warfare... And so let me also caveat something by here is that I was a professional soldier, so I trained and saw the horrors of some of this stuff. So those are not apples and apples. Those are very distinct, different things. The vagaries of chemical warfare, the difficulty of controlling the weapon and what happens with it are very different than the precise use. And a precise is relative of something like a nuclear weapon, which cost hundreds of thousands of lives, yes, but actually fewer lives than were lost in the bombings of Tokyo, but ended the war, saved millions of American lives, and probably millions of Japanese lives also. So overall, although it was, you know, it was a worst-case scenario,
Tom,
wound up saving millions of lives.
But this goes back to the main point I was raising, which is, as Catholics, do we embrace consequentialist thinking, which is it's okay to do something as long as it produces good consequences? So the problem becomes there. It sounds like your position would entail it's okay to commit a war crime as long as it reduces the most amount of deaths in a war. That's what your position sounds like.
Well, the church allows, for example, abortion or the result of an abortion if it, you know, the life of the mother, you know, if you're treating the mother, for example, and she dies, and that's going to directly cause the abortion.
Well,
the chemotherapy or whatever.
Speaking of apples,
so you're doing the same thing. The church does that.
No, I would disagree. Let me jump in here. That is actually an apples to oranges comparison. The church does not sanction the direct killing of anyone in order to save the life of another person. In the case of removing an ectopic pregnancy or a cancerous uterus, what you have here is you have a licit medical action that results in the unintended death of the child. But you can't just directly kill one person, even if it will save the most amount of lives. For example, and we're almost at the end of the show, and I finally did get to do this.
Oh, no. Here we go.
If I was in a lifeboat at sea with Cy Kellett and it's sinking,
yep.
All right, and it can only support both of us, can only support one of us.
Me.
Oh, well, ahead. Unless I push you overboard. The options are I kill Cy and push him overboard. And then at least one person lives, me, or I don't do that, and then we both end up drowning. A lot of people would say, well, go ahead and kill him because at least the most amount of lives would be saved. But that is not what we believe as Christians or as moral people, that we don't directly kill one person. We don't directly kill innocent people even to save other lives because all lives are intrinsically valuable. We have to understand that at the final count of things, we can't look just at it, lives gained and lost in this life. We can in some situations for sure, but then we neglect about souls that are gained and lost in this life. And that to commit mortal sin and to forfeit a person's soul results in eternal misery for that person that isn't worth whatever kind of temporal goods we might achieve in this life. I think that's another thing in these discussions about war. Sometimes we have a myopic focus. We just look at this life and the goods we achieve. And if that's the case, if it's only about this life, then all kinds of evils get rationalized when it's all about this life versus the eternal lives that we have and the intrinsic value all human lives have created in the image and likeness of God. So I hope that's helpful for you, and I'm glad that that you called in.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks very, very much. Let's see if we can get Kathy in real quick. Kathy, what Catholic social teaching moral teaching do you reject?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Short of time, Kathy.
And by the way, I'm a veteran, and I believe no war. I hate war.
True words never spoken. Go right ahead.
I'm having a problem with confession.
Okay.
Because it's the times they offer it, they think it's hard to go. Why can't I just confess my sins to Jesus in
my prayer?
All right.
Okay. Trent?
Yeah, and I think what I would say here is we should ask ourselves, first, I agree with you. I hate when bureaucracy keeps us from the sacraments. But we should ask, did Jesus give us the sacraments? Just as Jesus didn't want us to baptize ourselves, he gave us a minister of the sacrament. He gave us ministers of the sacrament of confession to stand in place of him. Just like in John 20:23, he told the apostles that they can forgive sins. Stay on the line. Sorry you got cut off, but I'll send you my book, Why We're Catholic. It has a whole chapter on why we confess our sins.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks very much. Trent Horn, thank you for two fine hours. Again, you did it.
Always fun with you, Si.
And I know you got a new book coming out, Counterfeit Christ. We've got to talk about that on the air sometime. But in the meantime, just visit Trent at TrentHornPodcast.com. Find out all about the Council of Trent and the good work Trent does there. We'll see you tomorrow for 2 hours of open forum, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.